Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, this is Eric LeMay, a host on New Books in Literature, a channel on the New Books Network. Today, I interview Kelsey Ervik and Tom Hart about their new collaboration, The Rose Metal Press Field Guide to Graphic Literature. The book brings together 28 of today's most innovative creators of poetry comics, graphic narratives, and image-text hybrids. With original craft essays, corresponding exercises, and full-color examples of their work, each contributor offers reflection and instruction informed by their own methods and processes. It's a beautiful and vibrant book that invites writers, artists, and would-be creators into a feast of play and possibility. Kelsey Ervik is the author of the graphic memoir The Keeper and several other books. Her comics have been published widely, including in The Washington Post, The Believer, and Lit Hub, and two featured comic series of hers have appeared in The Rumpus. She is a professor of English at Indiana University South Bend, where she teaches creative writing, comics, and literary collage. Tom Hart is the author-artist of the New York Times number one best-selling graphic memoir, Rosalie Lightning, and of The Art of Graphic Memoir. He is the executive director of the Sequential Artists Workshop, an organization and school for comics and graphic novels in Gainesville, Florida. Before founding SAW, Tom was a core instructor at the School of Visual Arts in New York City for 10 years. Enjoy my conversation with Kelsey and Tom. Kelsey and Tom, welcome to the New Books Network.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Hi.
I'm glad you're here. I'm going to read the title of the book that we're going to talk about today. And the title in and of itself gives us so many points of entry to talk about what you've accomplished. But before I even read the title, I just want to say that this is a gorgeous book. And the title is The Rose Metal Press Field Guide to Graphic Literature, Artists and Writers on Creating Graphic Narratives, Poetry Comics, and Literary Collage. So immediately, when you look at the front cover of the book, you're like, this book is covering or seems to be covering a vast terrain. And so when you talk about the book with other writers and potential students and things, how do you take them into that terrain?
Yeah, I think the title is one way of trying to bring people into that terrain. And we thought kind of long and hard about which terms to include, what to title it. This is obviously part of the Rose Metal Press series of field guides to different forms of hybrid literature. So it began with flash fiction and then prose poetry and then flash nonfiction. So this is the fourth in that series, and that we were just excited to pitch to them, like, let's talk about comics, but let's talk about poetry comics. Let's talk about collage. Let's talk about all sorts of text image combinations and iterations, and create a book that really like takes what we think we know about comics and just expands the field.
Yeah, you know, I come from a pretty traditional comics background, and so this has been a quick mind expansion for me, sort of piggybacking on Kelsey's curiosity about the form. But the great thing is that I teach a lot of people, and I see a lot of people saying, is it okay if I do blank, 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 blank? And this book pretty much assuredly gives the answer yes to just about any question like that. A lot of people are like, is it okay if I have not a lot of pictures? Or is it okay if I like put the words in this kind of format instead of that kind of format? Or is it okay if I use these materials? And I've always said in a very casual, but sort of coarse and unrefined and unspecific way, I've always said yes, but now I can say, yes, here's an example. You know, yes, take a look at this book, or here's a great person actually expounding upon that a little bit.
That was my initial experience. My inner artistic muse child was just so happy flipping through the pages, like, wait, all these things are possible. And this is going to be an impossible question, but there will be listeners who, you know, have some sense of graphic literature. Like they might have read Rosalie Lightning or The Keeper or, you know, Mouse or Fun Home or something like that. Is there any way to give us a sense of these possibilities that you're talking about? Like, it's a tough thing. Like, can you describe the visual impact of the book? But it is, I think, carving out these new possibilities that you can find them if you really go looking and know they're there, but suddenly here's this book where you see, like, oh my gosh, this is something I haven't seen before that is so artistically interesting, that's taking poetry and transforming it, that's taking image and transforming it. That's one of the problems that I've come up against as I've been talking to other people about the book. Well, what is it? And I think, how am I going to describe it? So I wonder if you all had any luck.
Well, I guess that's where we get into our sort of overly long subtitle and try to, you know, think about a few different categories, graphic narratives being maybe what we would think of with some of the more traditional comics, but where it's, where there's more of a narrative, someone's telling a story, whether it's a fictional story or a memoir or graphic journalism, but there's a story being told graphically with text and image, versus like poetry comics, thinking, you know, more about poetry where it's probably less narrative. It's more about, you know, words, language, image, texture. And actually, I kind of came into this via poetry comics because I find them, I mean, there's a huge range of styles and everything, but I just found them so beautiful, such a beautiful way into poetry and a beautiful way into comics. And I love how the words and images like interact with each other in a way that just invites you to just like, you know, feast your eyes. And then literary collage, I had already been working in a bit with my my book that came out before this, that before my graphic memoir, where I was finding textual fragments and moving them around with each other, but then I was also incorporating kind of cut and paste imagery into this story that I was telling. And so I wanted to be sure that we were thinking outside the panel, perhaps, is a way of thinking of it. And that, you know, that we could tell stories as well through like these found images and found words and like rearranging. And so, you know, I love the collages and the erasures that we have in the book as well, to think of all those.
That's a really thorough response. I don't have a lot to add, except that I'll just accentuate that for the longest time, at least where I was coming from and where I was teaching from and where a lot of students were coming from, was what is the story? How can the form serve the story? How can the images serve the story? What's the best way to tell the story? And so we're starting to move past that, or, you know, Kelsey, far before me, has been moving past that to like, the words you used were words, image, language, and texture. You know, how do those things create a form? How do those things move us inside? You know, what do they do? What does poetry do? I don't know. But this is sort of an exploration of all of that.
Yeah. I'm wondering, since you're both teachers, how you help and foster students into that creative space, because one of the wonderful things about the work in here is that it's work that essentially needs text and image. So it's not merely an illustration of a textual story, and it's not merely text to accompany a primarily graphic work, but it is this sense that you absolutely need both. I think in the introduction, there's something about it's both a mix of mediums and genres at the same time. And so you have these students that are wandering into the space, and in some ways, this book is a response to them, for them. So how do you work in that space? How do you encourage in that space? How do you, you know, workshop in that space?
Yeah, this book definitely for me came out of my teaching. And, you know, I teach creative writing, and I've taught fiction workshops and nonfiction workshops. And I have an arts, aesthetics, and creativity, like, general education course that's like intended to be interdisciplinary. And I've used it to start teaching literary collage and comics. And it has been the most like energizing, like, thing that's happened to my teaching. It's just getting students who come in and maybe haven't drawn anything since they were in, you know, first grade or junior high, and certainly never planned to be doing a comic or a literary collage. And I just get them to draw and write a song lyric and pair it with a drawing, and suddenly like there's like this energy of like image and text that they can feel, and there's this like pleasure and delight in sharing it in the class. And I was just want, you know, I've used different textbooks, including Tom's Art of the Graphic Memoir in versions of that class. And you know, and I wanted a textbook that would also, not just a text, I mean, I feel like this is not just a textbook, but I wanted a book I could use in class, in addition to being someone who, if I was on my own, you know, stumbling through this, that would have this like resource and range of ways of doing it. And I want to also acknowledge that on my personal journey of like wanting to learn more about comics, I found Tom, and he, like, I don't even know if he knows how much of a teacher that he has been to me through all of his, you know, books that he's written, the videos he's made, the online courses he's taught. I went down to Saw in Gainesville and met him in person and did a week-long workshop there. And I've just, like, I've learned so much through him, both from my own practice, but then, like, that I, you know, steal and take back to my own students.
So what did she steal, Tom?
Everything. I'm so resentful. She's going to hear about it in a solo podcast that I give sometimes. No. But I do want to agree the what Kelsey said about, like, you know, an image and a song lyric. It's a great place to start. And really, if you're going to ask, you know, how do you workshop these things and how do you get people into that space, letting them play is the first thing, right? Letting them combine in a way that is utterly impossible to fail at. Let them combine pictures and words, and then let them give them guidance to help them follow their own instincts after that. It's really, really, really been fun. It's something I've had to learn the hard way.
And I realized I forgot to get back to that part of the question of like kind of how to deal with it in more of a workshop situation. But it's interesting, in these particular classes that I was referring to, as opposed to my, you know, upper level creative writing classes, we don't workshop in a traditional way. It's, you know, it's gen ed and it is about play. And so, basically we put somebody's image, you know, like their comic or something up on the, you know, the overhead, like, through the projector, and I just say like, can who wants to say something nice about this, you know? And so all we do is compliment each other. And like a conversation might start to emerge where it's like, oh, well, you could do this or whatever, but it's mostly just like say something you like about it. And that I think goes to that, you know, it inspires more play. That I tell them they're not going to be graded on their drawing in this class, that they'll be, you know, graded on the effort that they put in. And it's amazing how much better your drawing gets when you put in some effort. So anyway, I realize this isn't the pedagogy podcast.
I think as we're saying that the book is, you know, you had mentioned this in your previous answer, right? The book is, it could be used in a classroom if you wanted to do this, like it's built for that. It's also built, if you can't get down to Tom's school, you can kind of go to this book, and it has a whole bunch of different activities that you can do that encourage that play. So maybe this is a moment where we should just let listeners know, like, of what does the book actually consist, right? Like, what's in it? Because I don't think I've done that yet. And that's probably, you know, here we are 13 minutes in.
Yeah, no, we've got 28 contributors that we are so happy to feature. And so that's the other exciting part is that, you know, readers will learn from 28 practitioners of comics and graphic narratives and and, you know, literary collage. And so there's 28 contributors. Each one has an original craft essay where they talk about some aspect of their practice and their making and their craft. And then they follow that with an exercise that invites readers to try it out on their own, followed by a 4 to 5 page full color example of that practitioner's work. It really is like a feast for the eyes. I mean, it's so cool to see the inside of the book and just see all these beautiful and diverse, works of comics and collage just like pass by your eyes, and then to know that you're going to get these like this amazing instruction from our contributors and with all sorts of different approaches and, you know, different rules. It's like when Tom was saying earlier, people are like, can I do that? You know, like, yes, you can.
There's so many different types of image word combinations happening here too. You know, you get some really traditional ones that are fantastic, like Kristen Radke's or T. Bui, right? Who really work in ultimately very traditionally. They use boxes, they use words inside of little boxes on top of the boxes and things like that. But I didn't know everybody that Kelsey was lining up. So there's some real, I say this in the best way, oddballs in here. Like, by that I just mean sort of like outliers or things I never would have imagined. Like Dustin Parsons has this thing about like dot to dot drawings, and he has this beautiful combination of story and drawing. It's hard to describe, and drawing pedagogy kind of, and it's this beautiful meditation on being part of a family and drawing a bird at the same time, and it's utterly unlike anything I've seen. And it's followed soon after by Deborah Miranda's really amazing work on colonialism and like her sort of coloring in these graphs and sort of creating these new images out of these old spreadsheets that had pretty much an evil purpose. And then like scrolling through it, and using the word scroll because we do so much of that in our modern lives, but like Oliver's work, I forgot Oliver's last name all of a sudden, his images are all actually, speaking of scrolling, they're all square and they're all these beautiful collages. And when I look at those, I think, wow, I wish Instagram looked like this. But then it reminds me that like everybody is playing in this landscape right now all the time. Everyone who's on Instagram anyway, and is playing with these memes and these ways of combining words and pictures, and we're communicating with each other in these ways. And I think this book sort of lets people go a little bit deeper. So in one way it's missing a subtitle, Kelsey, maybe it could be called Taking Instagram One Step Farther or something like that.
Yes.
Instagram for deep people.
Instagram that stays still for the eye or something like that. Yeah. But I guess, why not? Since you took us there, Tom, I'm going to ask this big question. So, you know, scholars they like to look back and talk about like the moments of genre emergence. You know, like the novel arises in the 19th century at a moment where the attention shifts from the, you know, like there's like all these ways of like, why did the novel happen then? Why did comics arise in the 1950s and take off? Like, what was the cultural soil out of which suddenly this thing grew? And it feels like, you know, Kelsey does this wonderful introduction where she goes back and shows all the precursors. But it also feels to me like this moment of graphic literature, like it just feels so alive as a genre. And I'm wondering if part of that is the way that text, image, and voice are suddenly showing up everywhere in social media, and this is part of that. But you all have been thinking about this deeply. And so if somebody said, like, why graphic literature now? Do things come to mind?
Well, does it, Kelsey? I have an answer.
Yeah, I actually was thinking I'd love to hear Tom because I love how you think about this.
Well, I think it's incredibly democratic. It's incredibly egalitarian. And I actually had to have this explained to me once. It was many, many years ago. So at least I've been aware of it for a few years. But the reason that the written word has been so so prominent is because it was cheapest for the longest period of time. And I love the written word, and I've always put it on a pedestal, thinking it was the pinnacle of communication. And then, you know, a few years back, when somebody explained to me that it was just because of the printing press and certain kinds of printing that really made that be the default communication style, I realized, like, oh, so maybe this thing that I do, which I've been doing for 25, 30 years, comics, isn't such a lame excuse, you know, such a secondary form, you know. And that's actually when I started to realize, like, oh, and the things that are happening on Instagram and with memes and things are real, and there are genuine ways we can communicate that we haven't really explored, because frankly up till recently it's been expensive to do so, printing color and printing well and stuff like that. So anyway, that's sort of what I think. I forgot the question, but I'm excited that there's so many people who will make an image or two, or you know, put some words and some images together and think, oh, I want to do more of this. That's sort of where this book comes in, I think.
Yeah, and when I was saying I love how Tom thinks about this, like in Tom's essay in the book, he writes about his 25 plus year history of making comics and the ways that the tools have evolved and the technology has evolved, and how he still feels tied to some of the original forms and the sort of more analog and manual tools. And yet, you know, is still like open and exploring all of the new tools and even making some music these days in really cool ways. So even expanding beyond. But I do think that the technology is so huge. My 15 years ago, my version of this course that's become more about comics did start more in like cut and paste collage, but it also in this class I've been talking about, but even my workshops, I started doing a lot of self-publishing of my students' work. Like either they would self-publish their own individual chapbook, you know, 35 pages or something, or we would do a class anthology. I mean, I say it as if I've stopped doing it. I still do it to this day, but I started it like 15 years ago. And that's just something like you couldn't have done, you know, even probably 20 years ago, to put together a PDF and have it published by, I mean, we use something like lulu.com, but there are other little self-publishing places where students could then, you know, I don't know, just like engage with their words in different ways. And as soon as you're thinking on the page, you're thinking of how the page looks. And they were also incorporating images, collage images, that sort of thing, that just like you could print now. You just couldn't have done that, you couldn't have afforded it. You couldn't have done it personally. And so this, I think, goes to that democratic spirit also that Tom was talking about. So, I do think our technology of what you're able to print, what you're able to share online, whether it's Instagram or all the online literary journals, it just means it's just so much easier and more accessible to make a scan or take a picture and upload it. And so it's exciting too to then see the way that literary journals, comics journals, everyone sort of is opening up and realizing, and being willing to publish this stuff too.
Yeah, there's sort of this moment of like realization that we aren't bound by a print, coming from the print. And I think one of the things I love about this notion that, through the democratization of the ways of making, we're seeing more of it. It also means that artists can find themselves more easily because it's not just people who are good at typing, right? Or people who are good at that your talents can flourish in the ways that they want to. And I think I want to take us to a student or a student or two that I bet you've had. I have them I teach a text image course where we blend and explore. And it is this internalized sense of limitation. And so the writers will come in secretly excited and they'll say, "I can't draw." And the artists will come in secretly excited and they'll say, "I'm not a poet. I'm not a writer." And then it's a matter of sort of excavating those internal limitations. But I'm wondering, I can imagine some listeners saying, "This sounds really cool, but I'm not a writer. I can't draw," right? They'll say something like that. So I'm just wondering if we could speak to them for a moment about the book, but also about the art that the book celebrates and exemplifies and fosters.
Yeah, I think that those two sides and questions and students that you're, profiles that you're talking about was just so on our minds. And really it's like, I am the person who's the writer going, "I can't draw." And I don't know, I can't say that Tom is like, "Oh, I'm an artist, I can't write," but he came out of the more, traditional form of comics. And so, I know that his work speaks to those people who do feel more confident and know a bit about comics coming in. And I think that, possibly my work speaks more to some of the writers who are like, "Wow, I've never tried this. I've wanted to." And maybe who, like me, found their way in through, erasures and collage and, step by step. And then I was like, "Well, now I'll start drawing a little," And I know those students and we really wanted to, our contributors really hit that balance as well. Many of our contributors kind of made names for themselves as writers and then started doing graphic work. Many of our contributors have been, comics people since the beginning and which probably came out of their interests in drawing and visual art first. So we've got something for everybody. And it's like the passion of my teaching life is to tell those students who say, "I can't this," that yes, you can. And like you said, Eric, like that excavation of limitations, I think is such a beautiful and exciting thing. And so, yeah, I hope this book brings that out in them.
Yeah, I think to anybody.
I was just saying, you started this school and you had people journeying down to find you. So I think, you've attracted students who are like, "I need a place to go to explore this art." So I'm just curious what you have to say.
I like so much. What I was going to say is to the writers who don't feel like they can draw, there's anybody can collage, and it's probably the most fun thing anyway. given anytime I'm stuck or have free time, I'm like, I just want time to make a collage. Collage is so much fun, and it unlocks so much in your mind if you let it. And to to me, that's the place everybody should start, frankly, is like collaging words and collaging pictures. And you'll just be, I think, surprised just how much lives in an image text combination. And from there, you can follow, again, your instincts. I want to try writing my own words, or I want to try drawing my own picture, or maybe if I add just a little bit of paint to this magazine clipping or whatever. And you can just build a practice from there, or an exploration, or whatever you want to call it. It's just a great medium. And I'm only now realizing how large the vista is, you know. It's really great.
You know, I had opened our conversation with just talking about the surprise and delight of turning through the book for the first time and seeing all the possibilities. And I'm curious, you know, for people who have been doing this kind of work for a decade or more, what was it as you were putting this together that surprised you? You know, Tom, you were just speaking about the possibilities of collage. Or maybe another way to say it is you had these 28 contributors saying, hey, why don't you try this thing? What was the one that you were finally like, I need to stop working on the anthology and the collection for a second and try it?
Go ahead, Kelsey, you have an answer to that?
No.
I think so many of them were so inspiring to me, but I will say the ones that are the most inspiring to me are the less traditional ones. And the reason is, actually, I'll go back to a little bit what Kelsey was saying when she said that I identify more with the visual people, or maybe I even, attract them or something, or appeal to them. But in fact, I started as a traditional cartoonist, but I can never figure out why I couldn't draw. It was actually very difficult, and it still is. But the writing has always been really fun to explore and fun to expand upon, and the sort of connections that I make through the decades of practice seem a little more natural, whereas drawing still feels like the same struggle it was when I was 16. And to that end, I'm really overjoyed when I see work where the drawing is less important, or it's less important that it be traditional, that it be what we're used to, that it be realistic, that it be photorealistic, or that it even have its basis in photography. And so some of my favorites are, I love what Aidan Koch does. She can just put a little circle down and it actually means something, because she's created this sort of pathway in your mind where a circle of blue means something and you understand it through her sort of leading you through a story, or any number of the people who in the book who did more poetic things, which again is the exact opposite of where I've been coming from for so long, and the exact opposite of my own memoir.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to like suggest I had no answer, because I didn't want to do any of the exercises. Like I didn't even really know where to begin. So I kind of was like, oh gosh. But I can tell you, I mean, I've already just through the process of making this book brought some of the, examples and exercise ideas into my own classroom. And, having someone do like what Lauren Haldeman did, where she had a poem that she wrote, because she's a poet, but then she turned it into a poetry comic. And like, so I shared with my students, like, here's the original poem. And I kind of had them think about how they might adapt it, because that's one thing I love, to sort of take one of the steps out of, one of the intimidating steps, either like the writing or the drawing. If I give my students a poem that then they have to adapt, I wanted them to start visualizing what they might do with it, and then show how she did that, how Lauren did it to her own, and how she, sometimes had images that were sort of direct reflections of the language, and other times the images like just did something surprising or came in at a different angle than we expected. I love Matt Madden's exercises in style. And so he's got, you know, I mean, he's got his book of 99 different comics, different styles and approaches to one story. And that book's been around for a long time, but we have five of the pages in here. And I just love the variety of those, from like, you know, like imitating Rudolf Topfer to creating a map that's just like a single image, but somehow the map is like broken and divided up to, with arrows and words to tell the story, that I just think is so, so clever. So, and that helps students see like, oh, like you could do this a million different ways. And so those are just some of them. Mira Jacobs, kind of her, like, she's called it paper doll style, drawings of herself in her comics, where so she'll just like kind of have this, the same image of herself over and over with, a speech bubble coming out and then collaged onto some sort of, you know, a background photograph of like where she grew up or the interior of her house. I love bringing those into the classroom. So much good stuff.
Yeah, I think there's this, thank you for that. I think that there's this way in which you can start to understand how image and text can work together, that doesn't rely on some traditional and reductive notion of quality, or the way that I'll often talk about it is that almost any mark can have an emotional weight. That if you draw, you know, quote unquote, like a child, that can have a tremendous power given how you situate it and how you frame it. And so I try to go forward with something to the effect of like, you can't make a mistake, right? What we have to find instead is what are the expressive possibilities of what you're exploring. And if you're doing, you know, smears of color, that's going to lead to one kind of work. If you're drawing something that has photorealism, that's going to lead to another kind of expressive possibility. I think that the book just shows that range of what you are able to do. I mean, there's the, I don't quite remember who it is, but it's just the fleetingest little marks on a page and single words and boxes, and, you know, and yet it's so moving.
Yeah. I was just going to say that's actually like why we started the book with, you know, so we've divided it into different craft sections, but the first one is lines and mark making. Like, we just wanted it to be an invitation. And so, yeah, the one that you're talking about is Leonie Briley, who has her comic Raw Feels is just, I think this is the one you're talking about. Just, yeah, like a little squiggle here, a line there, just like one word per panel. But the panels aren't even full panels. Like the lines kind of disappear and then start again. And she talks about the importance of like breathing, of like drawing and breathing being very similar. So we felt like that was a beautiful piece to invite readers in to not worry so much about, you know, the words, the perfect drawings, whatever, but just to kind of like breathe and be on the page and to see how marks, just the gentlest mark, can communicate.
Yeah. And that's followed by Nick Francis Potter, who actually was inspired by his children. His children were having more fun than he was and expressing more than he was. And he was like, why can't I work like them? And then tried to find a way in to those expressive possibilities that you mentioned, Eric, where, and his comics are really lovely for that reason, I think, where he just sort of lets himself play like the children play.
How do you two find your way back to play as a foundational impulse for the art you make? You know, Kelsey and I were talking just before the interview about the amount of just sheer labor and doggedness it takes to put together a book like this, because you're herding 28 cats as it's taking place. And, you know, the work of inking or the work of proofreading, which Tom says he bails on after 10 pages. So, right, there is this sense of like, you know, we know it when we're in that state of play or that state of flow. but somehow redeeming, you know, our artist selves and taking us back there. I'm just curious, because so much of this book feels like it comes from a place of joy, the work that the individual artists have done, even if the material is very heavy and serious.
Well, that's actually one thing I really love about Tom's essay in here, and specifically his sample. Like with everyone else, we get a full completed 4 or 5 page sample, and Tom's sample is process work, and so I just love he's got, you know, one giant panel in pencil that he's like written on. He's scratched out words. His characters are just kind of scribbles. He's written outside of the frame. And then the next one shows like the kind of like cleaned up inked version. And then the next page shows it with a little bit of color. And then the next page shows, you know, 6 panels in sequence. And I think that's just a great way of showing the process that you have to start with play, like let yourself scribble and let it emerge from your pen or pencil. And so I think that's a great way and it's like something like that, seeing that in the pages of this book where everything else is quite polished and even his final pages are quite polished, is a reminder to me of that really important stage of the process. I mean, you have to bring in play, I think, at every stage, but you have to start with play.
It's really funny that you use me as an example there, Kelsey, because I've quit comics, because I'm not enjoying it anymore.
And I had Tom, you're giving me a heart attack.
No, it's true. I'll give you the really short version, but I've been having fun with these 24 page stories for a while. And after 5 of them, I saw sort of where it was heading, and I spent a few really exciting weeks mapping out sort of issues 6 through 12. And then I've just felt overwhelmed and kind of bothered by having to assign so much effort to these ideas, and that's when I started playing music for the first time ever in my life. And I started to play, and I don't know how to play music, so I have no choice but to just experiment and let myself have confidence to know that like it's okay to really be bad at this. And I since have not gone back to comics, and when I try, that's the key question is just like, how do I enjoy this, but also do something that matters? And I haven't found the answer to that yet. I found it in cycles, like in the past, there's been times where I felt both at the same time, but right now it's lost.
Well, it's interesting though, because you seemed to really enjoy, you created this amazing comic that opens the whole book, the 2-page foreword where you and I are like floating, you know, like hanging out in some, like, I don't even know what kind of watercolor, gorgeous landscape. And can you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, if I remember right, that came right out of the music, actually. Or am I remembering opposite? No, I'm remembering the opposite. The music came out of that collage. Mm. What happened was apparently I had promised a 2-page introduction 2 years ago or something, and didn't realize I hadn't done it yet. So there was a two day turnaround. And also I wanted to honor everything I believe Kelsey has helped me learn over the past number of years. And so all I could do was in that amount of time was assemble materials, which involved me painting on all sorts of scraps of paper, scanning them because I'm pretty competent with a scanner and Photoshop, and then just trying to create a 2-page narrative out of that. And that was maybe the last good comic I've ever made and will ever make, because it was full of joy. It was such a pleasure to make, and it did matter, I think. I really wanted to give something that was both an offering to Kelsey and an offering to our publishers and to our contributors, and say like, I recognize all that you've contributed to this art form, and here's how I've grown from it. And thank you. Yeah, I don't know. That was, and then the music came out of that. It's like when I started making music, I was like, oh, this is just like collage, the way I made that collage for Kelsey.
So that's interesting, actually. I'm still trying to recover from this idea that Tom Hart's never going to make comics again. But
was the podcast on which we learned it.
I don't podcast. Think it's true. I don't think it's true, but I get what you're saying, actually, because as you were describing it, I was like, oh, that's where I got with writing. And I heard Kristen Radke, one of our contributors that Tom mentioned, say not exactly the same thing, but in an interview somewhere, she talked about how she, you know, moved it. She was a writer who started doing videos and then doing comics, and she just thought she would never write a traditional essay again. And I was like, oh, that's going to be me. Like, I just felt like in my bones, like, and that was, I think what happened was I kind of like got exhausted by, writing in general in my own writing. And I needed to like blow it open. And so I came to, you know, graphic literature and comics just with that play. Like, I felt like, well, I've already, you know, I've published some books. I don't like need to like, you know, publish a book of this, whatever. Like, and so I just started going, and it was just like so exciting to try all these different like styles and figure out what the potential was of the medium in general, what my potential was within it. So I found the joy in that switch. And now I'm kind of like, oh, am I going to write, you know, a more traditional something again, or not even more traditional, but you know, just something only with words. And I don't know. I remember early on, sorry, this is rambly, but Tom telling you after I was at SAW in 2017, and then we interacted a bit after that. And I was struggling with the move into comics. And I said to you something like, I miss sentences. I miss the rhythm of sentences. And so I was eager and excited, but I felt like there was something sentences could do that, like, once you put an image with it, it compromised the sentence and then, whatever. So I've found a different rhythm. I hadn't found it yet, but I understand now the way the rhythms of like panels and image text and, you know, that kind of thing can work in a different way that I find really pleasing. But it was a tough transition, high learning curve for me.
Yeah. Well, as we all say goodbye to the art forms in which we've achieved considerable success, I think my version of that is that, you know, having written a couple of books, when I start a project, I can see how it will end. And I think that's just a fucking ton of work. I mean, you know, and I already know what it's going to look like. Do I really want to do it? And when I work with text image, or some of the, you know, I've been working with audio pieces, I don't know what's going to happen. And so there's this delight and discovery. And I think that's what's also, that's one of the invitations of the book that you've put together, like, come in here and delight and discover along with the writers that you've collected. So maybe a good place to bring us to a close would be that this is not only a book that beginners could go to, but it could be a place where people who are looking to re-begin could go to and go from there. Well,
yes.
Kelsey and Tom, I'm so grateful for your time. Congratulations on the book, and thank you for being on the New Books Network.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us. It's been a great talk.
Thanks, Eric.
Sure thing. My name is Eric LeMay, and you've been listening to an interview with Kelsey Ervik and Tom Hart about their book, The Rose Metal Press Field Guide to Graphic Literature, here on the New Books Network.